This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Now with part one of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. Your grain futures from Friday of last week had corn finishing 3 1/4 to 5 cents higher. Soybeans were 18 to 20 cents higher, and wheat was just barely higher by a half cent. First off, looking at corn, those futures rallied on Friday with those gains of 3.5 to 5 as March led the way higher, closing at 437.5, a new contract high close. Last week, March gained 14 cents. The contract high of 439.5 established on November 30th is still holding. New crop December of next year closed at 418.5, up 3.5. Support for prices continues to come from several areas. Sharp gains in soybeans and a port strike in Argentina, coupled with recent losses in the U.S. dollar and short covering, were reasons for buyers to go on the offensive on Friday. A great start to the export season and a slow start to the planting soybean season in Brazil suggest that second crop corn will be later than usual. In addition, continued talks that China may need to purchase more U.S. corn to meet growing hog herd demand is keeping prices active. Basis levels continue to show strength for a time of year when they typically hold steady or widen. Soybean futures shot higher on Friday, breaking overhead resistance, trading at their highest level since 2014. January futures led the gain on Friday, closing 18 3/4 cents higher at 12.20. Last week, January gained 59.5 cents. New crop November closed 9 cents higher at 10.81 1/4, as well as gained 28.5 cents last week. Bean prices continue to rally on the growing concern that carryout could be less than 175 million bushel. A strong crush pace last week, along with a drier forecast in Argentina, and good export sales were supportive and added a bullish tone to the market. Funds remained strongly long, and the bean market, with technical resistance being challenged and broken through keeping the trend higher, and now suggests the next objective is $12.50, then $13. Bottom line, it doesn't look like higher prices have curbed demand. Another item that needs to be remembered is that the U.S. farmers have likely sold 80% or more of their current crop, and it's only December. That means between now and the end of the marketing year, the availability of soybeans from the U.S. producers will be limited. It's also thought that Brazilian farmers are likely more than 60% sold as well. Typically, bull markets advance when farmers remain light holders of their inventory. Finally, your wheat futures had March Chicago down 1/2, 6.08 1/4, May down 1/2 at 6.09 1/4, March Kansas City down 3/4, 5.69 1/4, May wheat down 0.5 cent in Kansas City, 5.73 1/2. A choppy week of more sideways trading in the wheat market, with Chicago losing 6 cents, Kansas City losing 12 from a week ago Friday. The week started with a bearish disappointment as 2 weeks ago Friday's rumors of an export tax on Russian wheat confirmed, but the fact it won't start until February 15th of next year was a disappointing blow. Although Kansas City wheat still began with a 6-year low supply level combined with continued drought in southern Russia and the U.S. plains expected to turn dry moving into the winter months, that kept prices supported. And to that degree, there is nothing new to report in the winter wheat market when it comes to fundamentals. Exports are still okay, but not incredibly impressive. The U.S. dollar did put in a contract low on Thursday of last week and trading at levels that haven't been seen in over 2 years. That, in theory, should be a strong enough sentiment for future export demand. January options expire on Christmas Eve this Thursday, and markets close early on Thursday at 12 noon Central Time. So to recap your grain futures from Friday, corn futures rallied with 3.5 to 5 cent gains. Soybeans closed by 9 to 18 3/4 cents higher, and wheat futures were 3/4 cent to 0.5 cent lower. Now we'll move on and take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Friday's Cash Grain Report.
This is Friday's reported grain price in turn prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. The late cut grain price were higher on Friday afternoon. Soybeans were up to levels not seen since 2014. in northern West Lockbit. Grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 6 to 7 cents at 408 to 439. Soybean bids are 19 cents higher at 1170 to 1216. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 5 to 6 cents at 420 to 442. Soybean bids were 19 to 21 cents higher at 1197 to 1220. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were up 5 to 8 cents at 4 and a quarter to 465. Soybean bids were 19 cents higher at $12 to 1248. Illinois soybean processor case soybean bids are 19 cents higher at 1230 to 1240. Basis was steady at 10 over to 20 over the January. High Pro soybean meal on a truck basis offered at $403.50 to $415.50 a ton, up $7.60 a ton, with basis unchanged at 200 to 10 over the January. Illinois corn processor K's corn bids are 5 to 7 cents higher at $438 to $463, with basis steadied up to at option to 25 over the March. Illinois River barge loading elevators quoted their producer corn bids up 7 to 9 cents. 445 to 450, with basis at 2 to 4 higher at 7 over to 12 over the March. Soybeans ended 20 to 25 cents higher at 1222 to 1231, with basis up 1 to 6 at 2 over to 11 over the January. East St. Louis barge loading elevator placed their producer corn bids up 5 to 9 cents, 471 to 472. These elevators raised their soybean prices 20 to 21 cents. Quotations at 1249 to 1250. Soft wheat closed down a penny at 637 to 638. Milo ended the day up 5 cents at 508 to 513. And contract bids producers for January delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 410 to 441. Soybeans at 1170 to 1217. In the central part of the state, corn for January delivery at 418 to 444. Soybeans at 1197 to 1222. In the southern part of the state, corn for January delivery at 427 to 466, soybeans at 1207 to 1252. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on to your livestock futures report from last week, cattle markets finished mostly higher Friday, seeing some buying strength before the December cattle on feed report. Hog futures also finished higher to end off last week. First off, December cattle were $1.12 higher, 110.47. February cattle gained 40, 114.85. For last week, December cattle gained $1.72. February trended $1.60 higher. The cash market moved back to steady to slightly higher given the region and on late Thursday, and that gave strong support to the December contract. Most trade wrapped up last week at $108. The rest of the cattle market was extremely quiet in front of the cattle on feed report Friday afternoon. The USDA reported that total cattle on feed as of December 1st were 100% or steady with last year at 12.03 million head. Placements in November stayed soft at 91% of last year, and total marketings for the month was 98% of November of last year. Overall, the report was in line with expectations, and with the price movement last week, may have been anticipated. The lower feeder placements number will keep support in the longer-term futures positions, as cattle numbers look to be tightening for next year. With the report behind the market, the fundamentals will come back into play more this week. Wholesale carcass values were mixed on Friday afternoon. Choice carcasses were $1.46 lower, $208.05. But selects were higher, gaining $1.49 to $195.10. The choice carcasses have been trying to find stability in the $200 to $210 range. Firmer wholesale values will be key to getting the packers to bid up for cash cattle in the next few weeks. Technically, charts are much improved as front months are trying to push through the recent consolidation pattern, and deferred contracts are building off established contract highs last week. Feeder cattle saw their lower trade on Friday. Jan feeders lost 25 cents to 52 cents rather to 140.45. March feeders were 30 cents lower at 142.30. For last week, March feeders finished $1.75 higher. The lower placements in the cattle on feed report will keep the cash market active and be support to feeder cattle. A close eye will be kept on the surging grain market after a limiting factor overall. Moving on, your lean hog futures finished higher last week to end the week. February hogs 30 cents higher, 65.80. April hogs 62 cents higher to 69.92. For last week, February hogs gained 257. April hogs finished 242 higher. The market was choppy during the session Friday and picked up some buying towards the end of the session. Prices worked back to top off the range and overhead resistance. Trade early on this week may set the trend going into Christmas. Short-term fundamentals stayed soft on Friday as cash trades still struggle and carcass values stayed soft. The lean hog index traded 66 cents lower to 64.39. The index has been working sideways to lower, and that will keep pressure on the front-month futures. Retail carcasses were softer at midday Friday, down 70 cents to 72.52. The load count was modest at 214 loads traded. Estimate hog slaughter for Friday was 481,000 head. Add in potential kill from Saturday, total slaughter should be pushing 2.6 million head through last week. Pork production will stay heavy on the week, with expected production for last week to be over 600 million pounds. The heavy supply keeps the pressure in the hog market going into this week. So again, recapping your cattle markets. Live cattle were 40 to $1.12 higher, feeder cattle were 30 to 52 cents higher, and live hogs were 30 to 62 cents higher. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Friday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday afternoon livestock report. Starting the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200-pound pork are concentrated $1.16 lower, in a range of $46 to $53 with a weighted average carcass price of $51.09. From the Illinois Direct Sow Port, slaughter sow price for a week with light demand for light to moderate offerings. U.S. 1 to 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded $24 to $27, 4 to 5 weighted $26 to $29, 5 to 6 weighted $30 to $33, and over 600 pounds $32 to $35. On the Illinois direct hog trade, prices of barrels and gilts country buying points were $1 to $2 lower with light to moderate demand for moderate offerings range from $29 to $35. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts a total $27,997. In the direct cattle trade, National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, choice steers live basis trade at $104 to $108 and on a dress basis at $167. Choice heifers and live basis trade at $106 to $108. From the National Daily Pork Plant Port, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 344 loads traded. Calculations for 200-pound pork carcass was $71.47, which is $1.75 lower. From the National Box Beef Cutout Port, values for choice and select beef carcass were trading mixed. Choice carcass 208.63, which is 88 cents lower. Select carcass 194.27, which is 57 cents higher. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 117,000, compared to 118,000 last week and 116,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated 481,000, compared to 490,000 last week and 490,000 one year ago. That includes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show on this Monday morning, brought to you by Farm Credit Illinois, by Taylor Tire and Auto of Litchfield, and by Pros Drainage. Coming up next, we'll have part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by Stein Seed and by the CNB Bank and Trust, with 17 locations to serve you. Once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now in Ag News for your Monday morning. Congressional lawmakers were hoping to get an 11th-hour virus relief package across the finish line as COVID infections and deaths soar, the economy loses steam, and Americans grow weary of waiting any longer for more help. Lawmakers were facing a midnight deadline last night when short-term government funding runs out to pass some $900 billion in virus relief as part of a long-term spending bill. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell.
After all these months, struggling Americans don't just need action. They need action fast.
Assistant Democratic leader and Illinois Senator Dick Durbin helped craft a bipartisan virus package forming the basis of any final House-Senate deal.
Extending unemployment insurance benefits with $300 a week federal supplement, $300 billion for business loans for those that are struggling to survive, an additional $13 billion for the food stamp program, now known as SNAP, $13 billion for our farmers, $25 billion for emergency rental assistance to avoid evictions, $34 billion to hospitals, clinics, a portion of that set aside for rural hospitals, $16 billion for testing and tracing and the logistics of delivering the vaccine across America, $10 billion for broadband,
which is key for rural students, businesses, and telemedicine, plus renewed checks for individuals and more for both daycare and schools. All of that is needed and urgently, according to American Farm Bureau's Dale Moore.
Well, it's pretty clear that the pandemic is not slowing down. It appears to be accelerating, certainly in this country, and certainly need that support that comes out of assistance packages we've had earlier this year. And so getting this one done and hopefully getting 2020 wrapped up on a high note relative to the assistance that folks need is certainly important.
Unresolved and likely left for next year and a Biden administration is any further work on contentious liability protection for meatpackers and other businesses, as well as aid to cities and states. In ag news and trade news from across the pond, Senior British Minister Michael Gove says that Britain had hoped to reach a trade deal with the European Union by now, but the talks may now go on until after Christmas. We want to ensure that Parliament has a say and a chance to scrutinize any agreement reached, Gove tells a parliamentary committee, so a realistic deadline will likely be immediately in the days after Christmas. Reuters says any possible disruption at British ports after the UK ends the status quo transition period with the EU and introduces new customs rules will be short-lived. A previous warning from the government said that even with trade agreements, the 7,000 trucks heading for ports in southeastern England would be held in check. Gove tells the parliamentary committee that a worst-case scenario, I would expect that we would find that after an initial few days and weeks of potential disruption, that things will resolve themselves and find a new normal relatively early into the new year, Gove adds. The British minister added that if there isn't time for Parliament to have a say in any potential agreement, the UK will have to trade on World Trade Organization terms. Back in news here from the U.S., Senate Finance Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley and a bipartisan group of three other senators introduced a bill called the Charitable Conservation Easement Program Integrity Act. The goal of the legislation is to stop the abuse of conservation easements, save taxpayers billions of dollars, and promote conservation in the U.S. The Conservation Easement Program is an important tool for protecting and preserving our environment, Grassley said. Bad faith scammers have taken advantage of the program through abusive schemes at the expense of the American taxpayer. Grassley investigated the growing number of scams and says they won't stop without legislative action. I'm glad to join Democrat Senator Debbie Stabenow of Michigan and Ron Wyden of Oregon, along with fellow Republican Steve Daines of Montana, in introducing this bill that would stop these scams from undermining the good work of farmers, ranchers, and conservationists, Grassley adds. Despite increased enforcement from the Internal Revenue Service, recent IRS data shows the total amount of deductions claimed through these tax shelters increased from $6.8 billion in 2017 to $9.2 billion in 2018. The bill preserves an important charitable deduction for people who have true charity and conservation in mind, including for farm families and ranch families. Tyson Foods fired seven top managers at the largest pork processing plant after an investigation confirmed allegations that they bet on how many workers would test positive for COVID. The investigation was led by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder and revealed details that an ABC News article called troubling allegations. An outbreak at the Tyson plant in Waterloo, Iowa, infected more than 1,000 employees, six of whom died. We value our people and expect everyone on the team, especially our leaders, to operate with integrity and care in everything we do, according to Tyson CEO Dean Banks. The behavior exhibited by these individuals does not represent the Tyson's core value, which is why we took immediate action to get to the truth. Banks traveled to the Waterloo plant this week to talk about the actions with the employees. Tyson spokesman Gary Mickelson says the company won't release any detailed findings of the investigation or the names of those fired because of privacy. We can tell you that Mr. Holder and his team looked at the gaming allegations and found enough evidence for us to terminate those involved, Mickelson also said. Registration is now open for next year's American Farm Bureau Federation virtual annual convention, and Michael Clemens shares what attendees can expect.
Farmers and ranchers are encouraged to register for the American Farm Bureau virtual annual convention planned for January 10th through the 13th, 2021. Nikki Jones, Idea Ag Group marketing manager, says the virtual convention will include many of the same aspects as a traditional in-person event.
The Farm Bureau virtual convention theme this year is Stronger Together, which underscores the importance of unity and finding creative ways to engage and support our friends and neighbors in the industry. You can expect some fabulous keynote speakers, education sessions. We have some of the old favorites, YF&R and the Ag Innovation Challenge, the Foundation Night In.
Jones says the convention includes a robust lineup of keynote speakers.
Our keynote speakers at our general sessions include Mike Rowe, who will join the convention as our special guest for a fireside chat during our closing general session. We've got the Land O'Lakes President and CEO Beth Ford, who will join Farm Bureau President Zippy Duvall. And we'll also be featuring an inspirational and entertaining keynote address from Navy SEAL Commander Rourke T. Denver.
This year, AFBF is waiving registration fees and inviting all of agriculture to attend.
For the first time ever, registration fees are being waived to give all Farm Bureau members and also anyone who's interested in ag the opportunity to experience one of agriculture's premier events from the comfort and safety of their home. Those interested in attending can find the registration link at annualconvention.fb.org. Register online, and then we will send you your registration link to join us on January 10th.
Again, register and learn more at annualconvention.fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
While not a big jump, oil prices have moved higher in the past week, thanks to encouraging results from the first rounds of COVID-19 vaccination in the United Kingdom and here in the United States. Patrick DeHaan of Gas Buddy noted that pushed oil prices this week to some of the highest levels we've seen during the pandemic. And he also notes that oil prices will continue to ride the coattails of the vaccine for the foreseeable future. Encouraging news will also push oil prices higher. Discouraging news will make them drop. But will the economy of the world return to normal, and will oil consumption increase to the years to come? DeHaan says it's just too early to tell.
We just have no way of realizing at this point how it's going to progress, how many doses of vaccine, any issues that could arise from that. 2021 will likely be the most difficult to accurately forecast when it comes to oil and gas prices because of the amount of factors that are completely unpredictable.
DeHaan also notes that OPEC agreed last week to increase production in an effort to get ahead of the demand curve as well as discourage the United States from getting back in to the production business. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced it will be leaving the monarch butterfly off the endangered species list. The service issued a warranted but precluded decision, which means the monarch will be considered a candidate species for now, according to Ryan Yates, American Farm Bureau Federation Public Policy Managing Director.
It places the monarch on a different list of a candidate species. So moving forward, the service will review the monarch annually to make a decision on whether it's warranted for seeing as a threatened species at that time or whether to keep it as a candidate species. Ultimately, I think what that does for stakeholders gives more opportunity for public-private partnerships to continue to support and enhance conservation efforts for the monarchs.
Yates says monarch butterflies migrate from Mexico to Canada each year through U.S. farm country.
That pathway crosses a great deal of land covering a large swath of the United States, and with that creates opportunities when we're looking to enhance conservation for the species. Ultimately, this species requires habitat as it progresses on its journey every year. Farmers and ranchers are in a unique position where they have the ability to invest in conservation measures through federal programs such as CRP to provide habitat benefits to bees and butterflies like the monarch.
Yates also says farmers and ranchers are already striving to be part of that solution.
We've been doing this for several years now, working with partners not only in agriculture but with the right-of-way groups and state DOTs. Many state agencies, wildlife agencies, are also developing conservation plans. And so again, this really requires a pretty substantial public-private partnership that we're certainly very happy to be a part of and certainly are committed to continuing the conservation efforts for the monarch moving forward.
Again, that's AFBF's Public Policy Managing Director Ryan Yates. And the monarch butterfly is the official insect of the state of Illinois. Finally, moving on to local ag news, a rash of burglaries of catalytic converters have been happening across the area, especially in the Litchfield area, also here in Montgomery, and even Macoupin County. To speak more on the issue and where these incidents are happening, we'll join Litchfield Police Chief Kenny Riker, who explains these incidents aren't just happening on the farm, but also in the city limits of Litchfield.
Actually, we've seen that occur in both areas. It's been more recent within our jurisdiction and within our city limits, but there are surrounding counties and our own have seen an increase in the thefts of catalytic converters, especially off larger vehicles here in the last few months.
Chief Riker also explains that this rash of burglaries hasn't just been an isolated incident, but there's been many cases across the Litchfield area.
Within town here, we have several locations where larger vehicles are parked and stored for extended period of time. So those locations are where we're seeing this occur. Some are our business locations. Some are just where a larger vehicle has sat for a period of time where I think they may see that vehicle parked there. So if you could place those in a pretty easily viewed area, you certainly have security lights or a camera system to place them within the view of that ends up being really helpful. So, and in the rural area, same thing. I know a lot of people now have Ring cameras on their residence or on their buildings and those types of things, so make certain that those items are within view.
Junkyards are kind of known to be on the lookout for that type of stuff because burglaries of them do happen. But how are folks that do steal these catalytic converters, how are they turning them over to be able to get money?
Well, those items hold some intrinsic value as the metal is reusable, so they are finding ways to resell those either through the black market or, you know, open social media accounts and those types of things. So there is a market for them. They are kind of easy to unload, so they're something you should protect.
And two, you're also seeing an uptick in burglaries just in general with vehicles being the colder time of year. And, of course, those vehicles on a morning such as this with the snow, folks leave their vehicle running before work, and either they steal the vehicle or they have easy access into the vehicle.
What we've seen here lately is access to the vehicle, vehicles being left unlocked, valuable items being left within the vehicle, and we're seeing an increase in those type of thefts. So we would encourage our citizens and citizens of the surrounding area to make certain that they keep everything secure, don't leave any valuable items out in their vehicle, and try to protect themselves as much as they can. Most times theft is a moment of opportunity, so they'll look for the easiest target, and if they find some resistance with a locked vehicle, they'll just move on.
Absolutely, and here before we go, anything that I didn't ask you that you'd like to mention?
No, just that we're working diligently, as well as all the other law enforcement in the area, to try to both deter and detect these crimes. So we will be out looking for these individuals as well, and any help we can get from the public if they were to see someone around a vehicle that appears to be suspicious, to give us a call at the time of the occurrence, and that gives us an opportunity to try to engage with someone.
And again, that's Litchfield Police Chief Kenny Riker. And that concludes Ag News here for a Monday morning, but remember, you can always send us your Ag News by a email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Monday morning, December 21st, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.